From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for the Ides of October 2021. The Bucks' last preseason game is tonight, and the regular season starts Tuesday when the Brooklyn Nets come to town. It's also the night the Bucks receive their championship rings. Two men who spent 29 days lost at sea have been rescued off the coast of New Guinea, 400 miles from where they started. Upon being rescued, one of the sailors famously said, "This was a nice break from the pandemic." A Nashville judge has temporarily shut down Music City Party Hot Tub. That's a mobile hot tub business. Let me explain. You party in the hot tub that's being towed through the streets of Nashville. And we thought Milwaukee's Pedal Tavern was cool. According to an article in the Miami Herald, someone lost 770 pounds of pot, and the Miami sheriff wants to reunite the owner with the property. Yeah, fool me once. A couple of drunken grandmothers, now that I have your attention. These two grannies broke into a water park at 2 in the morning. They got stuck in the water slide and had to be rescued by paramedics. From the book of Proverbs from the Old Testament, nothing good ever happens after midnight. Well, I guess the Bible can't be right all the time. And finally, our silly headline of the week is from the Bozeman Daily Chronicle. Juvenile court to try shooting defendants. A little punctuation would go a long way. On the podcast today, we have Steve Giles, Chris Evers, Joel Dreising, and wrapping up the week, here's Brian Kilb.
Thanks, Max. Yeah, a strong end to the week. Through Wednesday, things were a bit soft, continuing several weeks of downward pressure on the markets. But we hit Thursday, and the Dow was up 500 or so, and today 300 and some change. And we ended up with a pretty good week. So as we close the week, the NASDAQ up 2.2% to finish at 14,897. That's up 317 points for the week. The S&P 500 up 80. That's 1.8% to finish at 44.71. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 549 points for the week. That's 1.6% to end at 35,295, just within earshot of another new high. And the 10-year U.S. Treasury ended the week at 1.58%. So yeah, fellas, I think, you know, a big Thursday and a big Friday. I think you got to ask yourself in the context of the last month or two. We've had some downward pressure on stocks. We hit earnings season. We get a couple big days of earnings Thursday and Friday. Stocks react very positively. Here we sit. So the question, I guess, is there more softness ahead, or did we turn the corner today and we're back on the path upward?
Brian, I think that's a great question. I mean, we looked the last 3 weeks, and the market had pulled back, you know, 5 to 7% from all-time highs, and you know, we pick our head up today and look, and we're just almost back to all-time highs again on the backs of some good earnings from banks and some materials companies. We were just talking before the show of, you know, the strong earnings from banks, as well as Alcoa earlier today, that sent the stock up 15%. And, you know, I think as we look at the bank earnings, it's difficult to say what the banks are reporting for the third quarter is going to be a great indication of what to expect from other businesses. You know, the banks don't have the issue of supply chain worries or, you know, some of the labor issues in terms of working within the supply chain or having people, you know, in retail positions. You know, much of this is trading activity, mergers and acquisitions. So it's difficult to build a, you know, looking beyond banks and say, well, that means we're going to have a great third quarter earnings for all different types of businesses.
Well, and the other thing to add to that too, Chris, would be the retail spending numbers. We closed out the week with some pretty strong consumer spending numbers. We all know that consumers make up 70% of GDP, and to the degree that everybody's out there swiping their credit cards to add to bank profits, that's certainly going to be a positive to push stocks forward.
So the question then is, you know, are these earnings that have brought some, you know, good feelings to the markets in the last few days, are they reflective of what's happened, or are they reflective of what's going to happen? And I think a lot of the discussion this week still centers around supply chain problems and labor shortages and whatnot. And I think, you know, we're getting a sense that perhaps some of these challenges are going to be longer lasting than we might have thought earlier. I think it was Fed President Bostic from the Atlantic. The Atlanta Fed said something this week about inflation not being transitory, kind of talking about transitory as kind of a four-letter word and whatnot. And in that, when you start to talk about it lasting through next year, it's really not fair to call it a kind of a fleeting thing. So you're starting to see some public comment from people that matter at the Fed that inflation is going to be a lingering issue.
And Brian, you know, I think it's been pointed out on the podcast before that, I mean, it's really hard to tell. It's not like, you know, we've gone through a really quick recession that was caused by a pandemic in our lifetimes. I mean, we don't have a lot to compare to. You know, just some of the numbers that came out this week, you know, the Consumer Price Index, which is the broadest measure of inflation, it showed that inflation's up. It's continuing to go up. But, you know, I saw several signs in there that suggest maybe this isn't, you know, the be-all and end-all, that maybe it is more transitory or temporary. You know, it was the lowest monthly increase since February. This was, you know, looking at the change in consumer prices from August to September. Just food and shelter prices alone made up more than half of the increase, which says, you know, if it's not, and we had this talk about stocks, you know, if it's a broad movement, then, you know, it's a little more credible. But if it's more isolated to a couple of things, then you think that, you know, maybe it's going to go away sooner, or that it's not the force that it seems. There's a really big difference between the core consumer price index, which takes out food and energy prices because those are real volatile, and the headline one, which is the headline, you know, that we see, and that's the one that seems to be the one that raises eyebrows the most. So, you know, I guess we don't know. And I also think it's interesting that there has been talk from the get-go that inflation, although expected, might be transitory, that it might be short-term, and how that seems to be affecting the psyche of consumers, that some consumers are sort of saying, oh, well, if prices are only going to be up briefly, then I'll wait. I'm sitting on all this money. I'll just sort of wait and buy my Ford. I mean, you know, you can talk about your own situation again, where you just sort of say, okay, well, I guess I can wait a little bit and drive my car a little longer,
right,
and wait till the prices come down a little.
Well, and I think, you know, the part of that I like the best is when you said, I guess we just don't know. You know,
sure, right, yeah.
You know, you take all this data, and we all spend hours a day talking to people from all walks of life, you know, and I've said this a million times over the years, but, you know, where I feel the best is when the data aligns with the anecdotal stuff that we hear every day. And I don't feel that way about inflation right now. I get all these stories from people. I had a client in today. It does a lot of work with chipboards and whatnot. And one of their components that used to cost $1.70 costs $35 now.
Wow.
You know, and I hear stories like that every day. And then I think the second part of it for me as it relates to inflation is knowing inherently that inflation is also kind of a behavioral thing, that once you start to believe there is inflation, it changes the way you behave. It changes your buying patterns. And, you know, we've all heard these stories about people saying you ought to get your Christmas stuff early, you know. Well, to the degree that there is a mindset to accelerate that buying, get ahead of the Christmas rush, it creates more bottlenecks, which create more, you know, supply chain problems, which creates more inflation. And then all of a sudden you get this circularity to it, that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I wonder if we're in that neighborhood now where some of these, I mean, look at Social Security this week, Joel, right? Up 5.9%. That's about as tangible a number to a large group of people as you're going to get, right?
Right, yeah. And so the Social Security Administration has this cost of living adjustment that they've been doing once a year since 1975 based on consumer price index numbers, and they announced this week that it's going to be 5.9% raise for, you know, recipients beginning in January, beginning at the end of December, and that's the highest raise that we've had in 40 years. In 1982, it went up 7.4%. So there's an example of, you know, kind of an upside of inflation. And if inflation proves to be transitory, that's kind of a bonus for Social Security recipients, right? Because maybe their raise is going to, you know, far exceed what inflation, what the prices they're paying are. So they'll get a big boost, but inflation won't stay up that long.
You know, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, because we are now very much in a cycle where the Fed's going to start to reduce its bond purchasing, right? The central bank in Europe, the same. So that we think maybe by next summer, that part of easy money, that part of monetary policy will be behind us. And then maybe we start raising interest rates. So, you know, this period that we've had of easy money, maybe the winds are finally shifting. Between the Fed and Europe, we're buying $225 billion in bonds a month. So when that stops, if I do the math roughly, that's $3 trillion in liquidity coming out of the system next year. And I just wonder, that I'm surprised that we aren't talking about that more than we have been. Surprised that I haven't read more than we have about that. You know, because I think if easy money and high liquidity over the last few years has driven things, and that starts to go away, it leads me to wonder what the negative impact will be.
You know, it is interesting, Brian, because I think a lot of people are focused more on what the Fed will do with respect to interest rates. And because they have kept them so low and they've promised to keep them low for the foreseeable future for fear of maybe faltering this recovery and pushing us back into a slowdown, right? You know, we don't need to address inflation because that just comes with a growing economy, it comes with a recovery. What should we worry about? But the bond component, I think, is a very interesting thing that really has not been in the limelight. But maybe it's because of all these other things. Supply chain issues, well, obviously COVID, we're in the middle of a pandemic still. But at some point, everybody's got to come home to roost, I guess.
Well, and I think it's also so much less tangible for people than interest rates. Like, you know, if interest rates go up and you buy a new car and your car loan's 5% instead of 2%, or your mortgage is 6% instead of 3%, or whatever,
or your Social Security check is 5.9%
exactly.
Higher.
I mean, that's all real life stuff. You know, if I tell you the Fed's going to stop buying bonds or whatever, you look at me like, you know, what does that have to do with anything? But there is a lot of money chasing things right now, and it does to some degree elevate asset prices, stocks, housing, and whatever. And once that money starts to come out of the system, you'd have to wonder whether there isn't an opposite impact, a more negative impact.
To your point, Brian, you know, the Fed released their minutes this week and came out and said essentially that, yeah, we're looking at November, December for pulling back on the bond buying in the portfolio. And then they went even further and went and said the issue in the labor market right now is not the demand for labor. It's not that businesses aren't looking to hire people. It's that there's a lack of supply of labor. There's a lack of people willing to go out and work. And I think what's implied there is that the Fed realizes that the tools that they have are meant to increase the demand for labor. They're meant to try to speed up economic growth, to try to drive businesses to increase hiring, to reduce unemployment. You know, obviously one of the dual mandates of the Fed. The tools that they have can't really push people into working, right? So they're looking at their tools and saying, well, if our tools are really to try to, you know, reduce unemployment and cause businesses to have a reason to hire additional people, but we don't have an issue of businesses unwilling to hire. It's a matter of, well, people don't have a desire to work right now. They're realizing if we're going to keep pushing this money in the economy, if it's not doing any good at this point, we need to start rolling it back. So I think that was an important piece that they included that gives insight in what to the path ahead is. You know, I think one of the other points that you made was that, you know, you look at what the bond buying has done and what, as you know, as the Fed buys mortgage-backed securities, what that does is it pushes down long-term interest rates. So that's the intent, right? To push down both the treasury yield as well as interest rates a lot of times on mortgage bonds. And we've talked about what has happened to housing prices over the last year and a half. You know, it is directly related to a reduction of interest rates. I mean, you look at the actual cost of ownership. If you have a new 30-year loan at under 3%, you can buy a lot more house for the same payment, for the same total cost over the life of the loan, if that interest rate is lower. So it's pushed people to go out and purchase larger homes. And that has been constructive for the economy. But I think they're looking and say, are we having some adverse side effects from some of these policies that we've set forth?
Well, and it's the direct result, too, of interest rates being near zero. I mean, the whole reason the Fed is buying bonds is because they can't drive rates below zero. So this is just a part of infusing more cash into the system because credit is the lubricant of the economy.
You know, I think a lot of times most of our economic issues are kind of demand-related issues. Like, do you have a job, which means you have enough money to buy stuff? Because, Steve, as you correctly pointed out before, consumer spending is such a big part of the economy. So we can check all those boxes because there's a lot of money out there. People are employed. The people that haven't been as fortunate from a labor standpoint have gotten a certain amount of supplements from the government through the COVID thing and whatnot. So you got a bunch of people with money able to spend on consumer goods. What you don't have now is people to make the stuff or to deliver the stuff or perhaps materials to be supplied because of these supply chain problems. And I don't think we're used to looking at the world that way. I think we're kind of used to saying, if I want it, I can go to the store and get it. And I think we may, you know, over the next year or two, have kind of a different mindset where, you know, we can afford to get it perhaps, but we can't find it anywhere, you know. And I'll be anxious to see what you know, how that plays out and what kind of role that has with economic performance in the months ahead.
And those, you know, that might be some of the silver lining that we see from the whole pandemic. I was talking to a small business owner this week who said that, you know, I was pretty hard strapped when the pandemic came because he had to basically shut down his business. It's more of an entertainment business, people-facing business. He said, but in that time, I was able to reflect on my business model and to figure things out. And now he's come out and he's more prepared to do what he was doing before, but in a better, more efficient way. And if you take that just one business as an example, I mean, I'm hopeful that there are a lot of companies that are going to be doing that and we're going to be better off.
I think that really gets to one of the main side effects of the pandemic was it broke inertia on people's decision making. It was a major reset of the ability for people to sit and say, if the decisions that I've made over the last handful of years, what I still want to do, you know, we're seeing that in the quits numbers in terms of people leaving work. I mean, the data from August showed that 1 in 7 people in the leisure and hospitality business quit their job in the month of August, 1 in 7 in 1 month. Now, some of that's skewed by people from that are going off to college, you know, leaving in August. But still, that's a very high number. And you look at some of the other areas, the market or different industries in which there's high amount of quit rates, and it was people leaving jobs from places that maybe you would say, yeah, the pay is okay, but I don't really love this work, or I don't really love you know, the hours that I have to put in and the time of day. I think a lot of people have said, maybe I'm going to make decisions not just strictly based on monetary, what I get paid for this job, but do I really want to do this? Am I going to reset my decision? You know, we can sit here and make normative judgments of whether people should make decisions strictly based on monetary reasons or personal happiness all we want. But at the end of the day, it was a major reset, and people kind of broke that inertia of just doing what they had always done in the past.
You know, another anecdote, I took the bus to work this morning. In the 4 blocks that it took me to walk to the bus stop, I saw 3 banks that are closed.
Yeah.
You know, that they're like saying, hey, this model doesn't work. We don't need as many branches anymore. People aren't coming in. That's real estate that we don't need.
Well, again, I mean, what did the participation rate drop the most since World War II? You know, and when you talk about, you know, people being able to move around within the workforce, you know, if they're moving up, that's all good stuff for them, you know. But what is the overall impact on the economy, you know? And I think at some point in time, these things will all even out. Either, you know, we'll have more robots or whatever to do some of this work.
And that's the wild card.
Well, I think that's where we're going. And I think to your point about the COVID and everything, it's forced us to recognize where we'll have to fill these gaps, you know? But again, you don't go looking for another job unless you know you have a job to begin with, you know. And because people are flush with cash or because they know they can get another job, it's an easy choice, but it might not always be that way, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how that all kind of plays out. So I don't know. What else happened this week that you guys found interesting? Anybody? Joel, anything in the stat page this week?
Chris stole the thunder on the job openings, but you know we get those numbers every month from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it showed that that job openings actually took a step back a little in August, that they were at a record high in July, but there's still demand out there for workers, but right now the number of workers is exceeding the demand.
Yeah. I do think it's a great time to just remind clients the importance of balance and diversification and not trying to time the market. Everybody that looked at their portfolio values at the end of the month of September maybe were a little dismayed because we had a down month after a number of up months. And now we're talking 2 weeks into the month of October and we're almost back to where we were. So don't base your investment decisions on what the market does in 1 day or 1 week or even 1 month. It's years and decades.
Chris, anything from the week that's jumped out at you that we haven't talked about?
Well, we've talked about inflation a lot, and we also had producer price index come out. A big piece of that component is energy costs. I think a story this week, it's amazing to think how almost under the radar this has gone, but that you have oil prices back over $80 a barrel. Oil stocks have been the place to be, not alone prices at the pump have gone up. And then, related to energy, you've seen the price of natural gas here in the States as well as in Europe, even to a more dramatic effect, go up very substantially. So that should be something to keep an eye on in terms of what that means for consumers over this winter. If heating costs become kind of expensive, does that eat into some of that $1.6 trillion in savings that consumers have on their balance sheet that they've saved up over the last year? I'm sure that's not what many people hope to spend their money on when they save that money over the last year and a half, but it's something to watch with a close eye on where prices and energy costs go.
And Brian, I misspoke. The demand is exceeding the supply as far as workers are concerned.
Got it.
Stephen, anything else that we missed?
I think it's going to be a great weekend.
That's good. So that's good place as any to wrap up, right? Kind of heading into fall here. I walked out at lunchtime. I was like, it kind of creeps up on you, right? So get out there, enjoy your weekend. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next weekend, next Friday, to do this again. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.